Hey everybody, my name is Davis Buchanan, and I want to welcome you to the podcast where we discuss famous people and the names they share with people who might actually deserve to be the famous one. That's right, this is I'm Not Adam West, and joining me as always is my co-host, Adam West.
Hey Adam, how's it going this morning? I know that you're not feeling great, but what's happening in your world?
Oh yeah, man. I am not a person who gets sick a lot, but right now it is definitely hitting me. I don't know if it's like this final change in weather that we're kind of starting to get, all the rain in the air, but I'm coming down with something for sure. So, but I'm doing better now because of a reference that we just made off of the right before we recorded. We're recording in like 7 a.m. and so we're both a little tired right now.
Yeah, and I know I've been up for an hour because I didn't do any of my research before this. So this is at like last time, very early morning recording session.
So for those out there, I sing random things every now and then, just like when they pop in my head. And so this time, a song that I thought was pretty obscure from a metal band that I'm a big fan of, started singing the song, and then Davis finished the lyric, and we both were like, oh, you like that band?
Well, and to be fair, it is a pretty like, it's not a very well-known band. It is a pretty obscure reference. I think it's fair to say. It just so happens to be that this obscure metal band reference that Adam made happens to be my favorite band of all time that I've seen live in concert, that I have backed them on Indiegogo. Like, they are, which Adam doesn't know any of this. I told him as soon as we talked about this, I said, stop talking. This is our banter for the podcast. We're going to talk about both of our love for Protest the Hero. So it is, I don't know many, I know one other person who knows them and likes them, and it was the guy who showed them to me. Sequoia Throne. There's nothing that gets me more hype than the intro to Sequoia Throne. I think it's so good.
I agree. It is so good. Oh man, I could talk about this. That's all I've been listening to in the car for the past 2 days.
And yes.
So we just spent 6 minutes of our own podcast to talk about metal music that is far and away going to isolate us from our listeners.
Yeah. But I'm okay with that. I felt the future ears of all of our listeners hardcore judging us right then.
Like, oh, they're those kind of people.
Oh, they're those guys. Oh, they're that kind of people.
Yeah. But no, I agree, man. This is a great revelation. We'll continue to talk about this in the future. What about you, man? We haven't recorded. We recorded recently. So what have you been up to, man?
Well, yeah, we haven't recorded recently, but we did see each other recently, Adam.
Oh, shoot.
We saw each other this weekend in Austin. I came down to Austin. Lainey was at a conference. She works for the outdoor education program here at camp. And so schools come onto our property and we kind of take care of some of the science education for them. They get practical classes that they need. And so we get to hang out with them and do like a program for them that's like camp. They stay on camp property, but also they're like doing it for school. So Lainey was there with school. Basically, it's like a conference for anything that you could think of that's related to do it, like running a school bus companies and security companies and architecture firms and companies that make chairs and like anything that you could think of that a principal or superintendent would need or school board to like, you know, develop or enhance or work on their school or whatever, they were there. So outdoor education is one of those things. So she was there. So I tagged along to see friends and some of my like summer staff. And so Adam and I got breakfast. We got breakfast at Torchy's. Classic. Mm. Okay. Well, Adam, I have, as always, a question for you.
Yes.
And that question is, what common thread weaves together the tapestries of... Isn't that a good way that I did that?
I'm so glad you did that. This is what I needed in the morning.
Isn't that an eloquent way to phrase it? Okay, what common thread weaves together the tapestries of Whipping Boys, the Union of England and Scotland, and Groundhogs?
Oh, man. Those are three super obscure references that can only lead me to think that we're talking about Bill Murray.
Bill Murray is right, Adam. We're talking about Bill Murray. And here's the deal, dear listeners, is that whenever we looked up Bill Murray, because I figured it would be a common name, I had no idea how common of a name William Murray is. William Murray belongs to roughly 1 billion people who have ever lived. And so as we were looking through these different William Murrays, all the various things that they have done and accomplished and achieved, I think that we both came to the conclusion that, you know what? It's our double digit episode. It's episode 10. So why don't we do a double feature? So we're actually going to do two episodes centered on Bill Murray.
So Bill Murray is an American actor. He, first off, he's 6'2". Did you know Bill Murray was this tall?
I had no clue. I had no idea he was 6'2".
No way. I just don't see it. But then again, I've never met Bill Murray, so he could be as tall as
that's
he wants
like,
to be.
That's kind of like George W. Bush.
Is he 6'2"?
He's tall. I don't know how tall he is, but my uncle actually worked for him after he was president, like post-presidency, and so I got to meet him one time, and he's way taller than you think he is. He might be like 6'2 or 6'3. He was strikingly tall.
Wow. Okay. Good to know. Okay, I don't know about you, but when I look back on my childhood, there are a few actors and like movies that kind of stick out to me. And while Jim Carrey definitely took up a lot of my like childhood memories in his movies, you know, Ace Ventura, and others, I can remember so many Bill Murray movies that like just my dad was that sense of humor. So I kind of grew up watching a lot of Bill Murray movies. I mean, in my room, I have a Ghostbusters poster hanging up. I mean, I'm a big fan of the work that this guy's done. So Bill Murray was born in 1950 in Illinois. He was born in a family of 9 children.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And so a lot of actors, actually. You know his siblings. Brian Doyle Murphy is the other big named sibling. He did, if you saw Christmas Vacation, he's the executive, like the boss who comes in. Yeah, that's Bill Murray's brother. And he plays in a lot of, like, an accompaniment with Bill Murray in a lot of his films.
Yeah.
Groundhog Day. What else? Oh, he was in Caddyshack as well. So, so he grew up in Illinois for a family of Irish descent. He went to school at Loyola Academy, and then he would move to Denver to go to college there, but go to pre-med there in Denver, but dropped out. And then he later on joined the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, and this would just kind of go into a lot of his, kind of attach himself to a lot of things, people that he would work through his early career with. I mean, he came out with his comedy career right now is very strong. I mean, we have, so Caddyshack, he was in Stripes. I don't know if you saw that movie.
Never seen it, but I know what it is.
Oh, really good. Ghostbusters, Scrooged. And he's just like a pretty well-known deadpan actor.
Yes.
He's like seen him, you kind of know, like he's just Bill Murray is Bill Murray in every single way possible.
Well, and also I think what's funny is that if you're a kid in the 90s, you know Bill Murray, even if you've never seen a Bill Murray movie, because you've seen Space Jam. Regardless of whatever else of Bill Murray's career you've been involved in, we all know Space Jam. So if nothing else, that is familiar.
That's true. And you know how I feel about Space Jam, right?
I feel like you've talked about it on this podcast.
Probably. The more and more I listen, the more and more I think about Space Jam, and the older I get, the more I realize that is a terrible movie.
Like, and the more and more you think about it, and the older and older you get, as you say that, you get wronger and wronger, further and further into the arena of insanity and hypocrisy.
I'm going to stand by this one. I just am. So in 1975, he would go on to actually join, I didn't know this, but he joined a what was called Saturday Night Live with Howard Cosell.
Okay.
It only lasted a season, and then he would eventually go and join Saturday Night, which would become Saturday Night Live afterwards. Actually, I should just ask you this. If you had to say your favorite Bill Murray movies, what would you say?
Groundhog Day, I think, is way up there. I really, really like Groundhog Day. Honestly, like, this is not a Bill Murray movie, but I love his cameo in Zombieland, and I know that's, like, cliche, but I really do think that's very funny.
That's a great one.
I'd probably say that those two are up there. Groundhog Day is up there. I do really like What About Bob? I kind of forgot about that one until you said it. It's a great yeah. movie, but Groundhog Day
is
a great movie, and I enjoy it, and I remember watching that with my dad growing up, and so there's some, like, nostalgic value there. I actually haven't seen it in a long, long time, but...
Well, I actually watched that movie maybe... sometime last week, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. So very recent, because another podcast where I listened to, they were talking about Groundhog Day and how it's kind of crazy that it got made. First off, Bill Murray was going through a pretty severe divorce at this point. And so he did not want to play in a movie in which he was funny. Not funny, but like not a feel-good movie.
Yeah.
And so if you see Groundhog Day, you can definitely feel that in the movie. Like, he is very cynical.
Yeah.
He's playing to his strengths in that movie there. Also, and very unfortunately, this is the kind of where you see the schism appear between him and Harold Ramis.
Right.
Who were... getting really great friends, worked together on a lot of projects, and then because of how Bill Murray was in this film, didn't talk to each other for years until right before. I've seen some places that said that they never rekindled, and other places that said that right before Harold Ramis' death, they were able to like kind of bury the hatchet.
Right.
So I don't know if that's true or not. It kind of seems like maybe some people are trying to, it ended on good terms kind of thing. But anyway, great film. Just explores so much about like different aspects of what if you had to live the same day, what would you do?
Yeah, sure.
Just so good. I really do love that movie. And so after this, he started taking roles in a more serious tone.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch Lost in Translation?
No, but I mean, I've seen like clips of it and heard, I mean, I know how great of a movie it is.
I watched this in high school, and yeah, even in high school when I was not like fully a human being, knew that like this was like great.
Let's pause. What a phenomenal way to describe being in high school. That is, I don't know if I've ever heard a more concise, more complete way to describe the phenomenon and the social insanity that is being a high school student, which is before it is not being fully human yet.
I'm just saying
that it's like, so good.
anyone listening, go back and look at your high school and think, that's the person that I wanted to be. Like, no one says that.
No, you're absolutely right. That's so funny, Adam.
Yeah. So, but even then, I knew that Lost in Translation was like a great film. I bought it. It was one of my first movie buys, actually. Yeah, just, and so this kind of transitioned him into playing more serious roles. He played Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Yeah.
Amazing film. And this is like his collaborations with Wes Anderson would start with Rushmore. Just a bunch of great films came out of that too. So I think Bill Murray might be one of the most adored actors currently.
He's like the world's favorite person.
Yeah. And he's like getting to that point where he's almost everyone's favorite grandpa.
Yeah.
You know, like he's getting up there in age. And so, do you know about his outside film life right now?
No.
Like the notorious appearances of Bill Murray?
I've heard of some of them. The one that that's sort of this, you know, legendary story that I actually Googled a little while ago to see what it actually happened. But the story goes that, like, I read some article about somewhere, someone was at a bar in New York City and all of a sudden he was like sitting there and at like 11 p.m. Bill Murray just walks into the bar and goes and it doesn't come to order a drink. He like walks behind the bar and starts serving people drinks. But no matter what they order, like if they go up and they order a drink, no matter what they order, he pours them a tequila shot. So he just keeps giving people tequila shots.
Well, there's apparently a documentary and I watched the trailer for it and it's called The Bill Murray Stories, Life Lessons Learned from a Mythical Man.
Hilarious.
The cover art for it is like Bill Murray in like a Sasquatch body, but his face on it.
Yeah. Well, that's like, if I was ever famous to any degree for any reason, that's exactly what I would do. Like, oh, I would just go random places and show up at like events and just to be there and like... That's like the only positive use of fame I could think of, other than like getting people to support noble causes and like donating lots of money to charity. But other than that, just to like make people happy and like make their day a little bit more notable to be like, oh my gosh, that famous person showed up at this thing. That's like, I think that is so cool and fun and just like, that's just a good thing, you know?
Yeah. And he's just to go with his like personality. There's stories so he's pretty inaccessible from like the Hollywood scene in general. Notably, he doesn't have an agent or a manager.
Interesting. I had no idea. That's fascinating.
Yeah. He only fields offers through a personal telephone number, which he has like a voicemail box set up and doesn't ever check it. And so like he hasn't got, he's been offered roles for a lot of films that he never was a part of because of this. Like he just didn't know that he was offered these roles.
Yeah.
And he seems pretty like, whatever about it, you know. He's like he's in the ones he wants to be in, and that's it for him. And so, just an eclectic guy.
Right,
I'm a big fan of him. So,
well, Adam, now that we have introed the main man himself, the good dude, and what we're doing, you want to take a quick break, and then we'll hop into the other Bill Murrays.
Yeah, let's do it. Hey guys, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just wanted to stop and mention if you or someone you know shares a name with a famous person, we'd love to know. You can reach out to us on inawcast@gmail.com. That's inawcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter by searching inawcast. Like, share, subscribe. Really, anything helps us get our podcast out there. So please tell your friends, review, and enjoy the rest of the episode.
All right, Adam, we're back, and let's talk about some of the other notable Bill Murrays that we have seen throughout history. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, perfect. Well, a few that we're not going to dive into super deeply, but want to talk about. There is a William Grant Murray, who was born in 1877, who is a British man, and he was an art teacher. He curated a art gallery. He was an artist who principled the Swansea Art School from 1908 to 1943. So he kind of had a big hand in leading the artistic life of Swansea between World War I and World War II. So he's interesting, did some cool stuff. There's another William Henry Harrison Murray, also known as Adirondack Murray.
Wait, say that name again for me.
Is that, how do you say the, what's that mountain range? I don't think I've ever heard anyone say it out loud. That's,
I think you hit it right
is
on
it,
the
Is it Adirondack? Just, yeah.
Yeah, I think you did.
So the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York, he kind of wrote a lot of articles and books about those mountains that kind of popularized them. So he's kind of credited with bringing the public awareness and like attraction to the Adirondacks to the world. And he was the father of what's known as the outdoor movement, which doesn't have, it's not highlighted blue in Wikipedia. So I don't know what the outdoor movement is.
It's a movement to not be indoors.
Yeah, right. Okay. Perfect.
I think that's scientific term is that.
Perfect. He so he wrote a book called, well, in 1869, he published a book called Adventures in the Wilderness or Camp Life in the Adirondacks. And so kind of what I think is really cool, this book is really cited when people talk about, there's a, like one of these literary or linguistic phenomenons where words like change.
Spoonerisms? Is that what you're talking about?
No, not spoonerism. Spoonerism is when you flip the first syllables of words. Or, you know, as the spoonerism would say, the first syllables of surds. You know what I mean? So this book is credited with changing the American use of vacation instead of holiday. So right, how British people say holiday. Up until this book was written, Americans would say holiday too. And then Bill Murray used vacation in his book, and people started saying vacation rather than holiday. So he kind of changed that, which is kind of a cool deal.
That's awesome.
I know. And that's just like a fun fact of history.
I enjoy learning where words came from, like the etymology lot of time. And so that's just really fun to hear that. Oh, like that's because I've always wondered why we don't say holiday. Because I mean, I'm sure you've traveled abroad. You've heard people totally. Say holiday, and it's a weird thing to like associate in your head with, like, oh, that's what you mean. Yep. So that's interesting.
Absolutely. There you go. It's William Murray. Bill Murray did it.
That's cool. All right. I got one for you.
Yeah, go for it.
I have William Murray, the first Earl of Dysart.
Okay.
Which I hope I'm not butchering.
Probably are. It's probably true.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I did look it up to see how to say it, and that seemed like the best there way to go. Say that
Fair
word.
Enough.
So, William Murray was the childhood whipping boy of Charles I of England and later became advisor to him. And so, two things I want to point out about that, and we'll get to the second one about him being a whipping boy later, because I found some kind of interesting stuff on this.
Yeah. But,
so he grew up, he basically, his uncle was, took him into the court at an early age, his uncle Thomas Murray, and he was educated alongside Prince Charles, who would eventually become Charles I of England. And so at this point he became, he had his tutelage years growing up with him. They became very close, so much so that he would eventually become the gentleman of the bedchamber, which I definitely had to look that up because that sounded weird. And it is not what you think it was. Like, your first instinct is not what that is.
Adam, I had no first. There's no first instincts. There's no.
Okay, well,
I am a tabula rasa. I am a blank slate with which to write the knowledge of the world upon. So, what it is.
Let me pin this for you then. So, gentleman of the bedchamber basically meant he was the servant that helped out with his like personal affairs.
Yeah.
So you'd have different people in the court that were distinguished for doing different things, either politically, or with like finances and things like that. He was more of like their personal correspondence with other parts of the realm.
It's like a handmaiden, like when a queen or like a lady would have a handmaiden. It's like the very very close associate takes care of all your stuff for you.
But no guy apparently wanted to be called a handmaiden. So no, so
gentleman of the bedchamber. That's like that sounds so much more like way masculine better, and trusted, and that makes a lot of sense.
I want to know who the first of this was and why they didn't say that's a terrible name. But,
which I will say, the gentleman of the bedchamber sounds like a great band name. Like Men, it'd be a solid band name.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually pretty good. I don't know what kind of music they would play. No. Nor do I want to know.
No.
I don't want to know what that kind of music is.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he had a lot of influence over Charles, became what is known as a covenanter, which basically meant he was really close with the Scottish Presbyterian movement. So this is obviously in the turmoil of England and in Scotland.
Yeah.
And so he was kind of able to create arbitrations between these two, so much so that he would go to Scotland and would actually be invited to correspond with people and prisoners in Scotland. They like trusted him enough to do such a thing. Lived pretty well doing that. He was also just kind of seemed to be a compassionate person.
Okay.
He encouraged the impeachment of two Scottish earls or noblemen, but also informed them of their danger. And so kind of like told them, hey, you should probably leave or they're going to try to kill you. So I think he was more compassionate than others. So he also abdicated that, things are going south for Charles. And so he kind of abdicated that Charles should flee and hide. This was all going according to plan. And then Charles at the last minute decided to change his mind and actually stayed in England, which kind of created a schism between him and Murray at that point. So, he kind of ended. He himself would go into exile for this. He had a pretty interesting life as far as what he was able to do and how he was able to serve. But I also want to talk about the fact that he was a whipping boy.
Explain that.
Okay, so I had to check a few places because it seems like there's some contention on whether or not it was what it sounds like. Yes, exactly. And so I don't know if you, I think there was actually a movie called The Whipping Boy, right?
I have no idea.
Or maybe it's The Prince and the Pauper that deals with something like this.
Yeah.
But the basic idea is, so a whipping boy would be taught alongside a person of nobility, and that a monarch was too important to receive any kind of corporal punishment.
Okay.
And so while these two kids would go up and be tutored together,
yeah,
the friend or the whipping boy would receive the punishment,
okay,
of anything that the other kid, like the prince or the monarch did. And so, and the idea being that the monarch or the prince would see the corporal punishment being done and feel bad for
right,
what he himself had done.
Yeah. So there's because that works so often with little kids. It's like, hey, this other person's going to, because they really feel that, the guilt and the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember if your mom ever told you that she was, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed in you. I don't know if you ever got that line.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, but when I did, I was like, sweet, that's cool with me.
Yeah, like, or like, I can't imagine me being a little kid and being like, hey, you did this, now your little sister is going to get grounded. I'd probably be like, yes, that's a cherry on top. That's a bonus.
They used a quote here that says, you would want to beat a dog before you beat a lion.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of the idea there. And it's just... I mean, even as me and you were talking, like, we clearly see that that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so there are people, historians who are kind of doubting the validity that a whipping boy's ever really existed, at least to the extent of they claim to be.
Right.
I
like sort of get the idea as far as I think the practical purposes of if like, if there's corporal punishment that needs to be done to a prince, who's going to hit him? Because like everybody, I say hit him because this is a time before it was like, I mean, that wasn't super uncommon. Whip. Yeah. But it was like, who's going to do that? Because this is an era where mom and dad really aren't around necessarily. They don't necessarily raise their kids. Yeah. It's like the job of somebody else. But this kid is the heir to the throne. And that's like treason, right? if you like strike him. So you got to figure out a way to do it. It's just one of those funny quirks of the way that society was run. It's like nobody can actually punish this kid except for mom and dad. And they're not around really.
Yeah, I understand that concept as well. And like, yeah, I mean... If you did strike the king to be and he tells on you and you lose your head for it, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, he is still called the whipping boy of Charles I. Again, to what extent that would have been, who's to know?
Yeah.
But that is Bill Murray.
There you go. I actually want to talk about a William Murray who's also the first Earl, but he's the first Earl of Mansfield.
Okay.
William Murray, first Earl of Mansfield. He was born in 1705. He died in 1793. He was another British guy who was a barrister. Again, we've talked about this on the show before, but he's a barristers. Lawyer, right? So he's like a lawyer, politician, and judge, and he kind of his claim to fame is that he did a lot to reform English law. So the way that English law was carried out, the way the judgments were passed, he did a lot to kind of reform that. His kind of best known judgment in a case was in Somerset's case, which is a case that has to do with slavery in England. So we'll get to that later, but he is credited with a lot of advancement and progress in the idea of the legality of slavery in London. He didn't abolish it, and a lot of people will say that he wasn't even really trying to, which is kind of a blemish on his record, that he never really intended to abolish slavery, but he did kind of change some of the laws that made it a lot more prohibitive to be able to own slaves in England. But we'll talk about that later. Uh-huh. He ended up going to Oxford. He did really well. People described him as really intelligent. But he went into law. And at this time, law was actually pretty overcrowded. And so he didn't have much success becoming a lawyer for a while, but ended up his kind of natural intelligence, some of his connections got him a place in English law. he did a couple other things. He, you know, became fluent in Latin eventually and translated some of Cicero's works into English back into Latin. Just kind of did some, he just is like a smart dude. In Edinburgh, which is the capital of Scotland, or like kind of, it was the capital of Scotland. It's like the biggest city in Scotland. Tradition, it wasn't this anything legal, but there was this tradition that if criminals were sentenced to death, they could go visit this church that was near the city jail on Sunday before they were executed, right? So they said, hey, you could go to this church. So there are these two criminals on death row, Wilson and Robertson. You go to this church and they basically say, okay, well, we're out of here. And so they use this as an opportunity to escape, right? So they try to get out of dying, right? So Wilson didn't get out of the church, but this guy named Robertson escaped, like, fully. He got away. But Porteous is the captain of the Edinburgh City Guard. He was really – so the Porteous was really mad that this guy tried to escape. And so when this guy, Wilson, who was captured again, was sent to be executed, he asked for a guard of 80 men to be – put around the gallows, like this huge show of force of like, hey, this guy broke the law. We're gonna hang him for it. So this man runs up out of the crowd and tries to cut Wilson's body down. He was executed. This guy tries to cut his hanging body down. No. Porteous orders his troops to fire on the crowd, and 7 people died. Ooh. Yeah.
Wow.
So Porteous kind of goes above and beyond the bounds of his authority, right? And orders his troops to fire into the crowd. 7 people die. And Porteous was initially sentenced to death for murder. And then when this execution was kind of delayed, because I don't think Edinburgh really wanted to hang him, there was this mob of citizens that rushed the city jail and they lynched him. Basically, this bill came against the city of Edinburgh that wanted to disenfranchise them for what they'd done, which means disenfranchisement is that they wouldn't have a right to vote anymore, and the city of Edinburgh would be taken out of the voting process. But Murray, because he represented the city of Edinburgh, the work that he did, he was such a good lawyer that he actually ended up, when that motion got passed, all it did was fine the city and disqualify the provost, which is kind of a specific position of the city. So this bill that they wanted, their punishment is that you don't get to vote anymore. William Murray is such a good lawyer that he whittles that down to a really kind of minor effect. So really interesting. Like, the morality of that is pretty gray. Like, what, you know, whose side you're on, I think, is up for debate. But what that does show is how good of a lawyer William Murray is. And it's just like a really interesting case. But with all that being said, his most famous case was the Somerset case, which was about the legality of keeping slaves in England. There's this whole story kind of behind it. It was this guy who tried to escape and he was recaptured and then this man, Somerset, was an escaped slave who was recaptured and they tried to sell him in Jamaica. And so basically this case came up and William Murray ruled that it was illegal for slaves in London to be sold and transported outside of London. So it was this big case. It didn't abolish slavery in London or in England, right? It didn't say you can't have slaves here. It just said you can't transport a slave outside of England. But what a lot of people took this to mean, as who didn't really read or understand the case fully, they took it to mean that slaves were free now. And so there were about 14,000 and 15,000 slaves that were immediately freed right after that ruling because people didn't understand like what this actually meant. And so kind of unintentionally, it became this huge step in freeing slaves in England because people didn't understand what was going on. They freed a bunch of slaves, and then it was kind of this social, a little bit more of a social revolution that people freed a bunch of slaves. And so there were some other things that he brought up in the judgment that kind of devalued kind of the legality of slavery in England. Even though Mansfield himself, he didn't really follow through this until much later. He had a great niece who was born to a slave. She was not born to two slaves, but one of her parents was a slave. And he kind of kept her as a slave in his household, but then his will declared that she could be considered a free woman. So there's this idea that maybe over the course of his life, his ideas on slavery changed. But even though it didn't abolish slavery at this time, it was considered kind of a significant decision in the legality of slavery in England, which is really interesting. He ended up retiring. On March 10th in 1973, he complained that he was feeling sleepy. And then on the March 12th, kind of the same thing. He was like, hey, I'm really sleepy. And then he went to bed and just kind of was asleep for 6 days, and then he died. So kind of died peacefully in his sleep in 1793, and to kind of left this legacy of different legal changes. The system of law changed. He was married but never had any kids. He's got several honors. Like, he's got this inscription in Westminster for him. And then he was noted, people remember him as he's this hardworking, really, really intelligent, great speaker, who was maybe kind of prideful and haughty and really, really quick to judge. So really interesting. I think he did some, there's some really, really cool cases. I wish we could dive more into it. He's like, I feel like he's worth a podcast episode just on his own, because there are a bunch of these cases that we could dive into, really interesting stories that he worked on. But that is William Murray, the first Earl of Mansfield.
Wow. Yeah. I was kind of blown away by a lot of that.
Yeah.
The whole slavery stuff was very interesting. Wow, Davis, this is a lot of material we've covered.
Good material. I'm glad that we're splitting this up into two episodes.
Yeah, I think that's true. And hopefully when we record our next one, I will not feel as...
feel terrible.
Just slow in the head and everything. So for you listeners out there, this is our 10th episode. This is kind of a milestone in itself. So thank you so much for listening. Yeah, like we said, this is a... part one of a part two or two parts episode, so we will finish on Bill Murray next time. David, do you have anything else?
I don't think so. Thanks so much for listening, and this has been really, really fun.
You're right, David, this has been really fun. I'm glad that we've been doing this, and I'm glad that you are hopefully listening out there. We'd like to thank Broke for Free for letting us use their song Luminous, and until next time.